Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 6 of the Summer Library Podcast. I am Paul Sorrell, along with Stephen Mount. How are you, sir?
Doing well, and yourself?
I am okay. So today is August 28th, 2012, and we have been back at school for the fall semester for a week. It has been a busy week.
Yeah, it has.
And it's amazing how things can turn on a dime. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was a little activity, and then boom, all of a sudden everybody's back and hard at work, and lots of things are going on around campus and in the library. And, of course, this is the kickoff of football season. We have a hurricane brewing in the Gulf of Mexico, which may bring some rain to us in the next few days. We do need rain. Hopefully it won't destroy a lot of property. And
Louisiana in the process.
Yes, we certainly don't want that. They have had enough to deal with over the last few years. So what's going on, Stephen? Are you reading anything?
Oh, nothing much. I don't have anything I'm reading right now. How about you?
I am reading something. I am reading a book that I found on the recreational reading shelf.
What book are you reading?
I am reading The Power of Habit. And it's quite a good book. It's how we form habits and how we can change habits and all sorts of things.
Nothing to do with nuns.
Nothing to do with nuns. Okay. Strictly other habits are involved. And it's one of many new books that we have on the recreational reading shelf. And back a couple months probably now, Margaret and Beth and Annabeth sat down and ordered a lot of new titles for that area. And it is really a nice section. And I would encourage anyone who has some time to devote to reading some non-academic things to check out the selection. And the recreational section has moved. And it is now across from
the circulation desk.
Very good.
I'd imagine somebody moved it. It probably didn't move it. So
no, I don't think it did. You know, unless, I don't know, fairies came at night and did it. I don't know.
Maybe not.
And
it's a nice shelving there right across from the circulation desk. I think that it's a wider selection, too, than it once was.
Yes. So, yeah. And it's going to be a nice addition to the library's holdings. And also, we have new faculty development material, and that is currently right in the front of the library as you come in where the recreational reading was. So there are a lot of resources there for professional development.
You don't have to be a faculty member to check them out.
You do not. Anyone can check out things in the faculty development section. And we've also got a couple of new databases. And I tell you, this Films on Demand thing is kind of a cool thing, and now we've got something similar to it, and it's called Intellicom Online Resources Network, and it is a database of academic video clips, which you can stream on demand.
I think that'll be very popular. It's a very neat database.
Yeah. Do you ever watch things on Films on Demand?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of interesting things there, and of course, the cool thing about that, professors can incorporate those clips into their lectures and into online classes, and it's really a very useful and beneficial resource that we have here in the library.
Yeah, accessible from any computer with a union login. Right,
you can be off campus, and all you have to do is put in your username and password, and you can stream from anywhere. And we also have a new database. And this is called IEEE, which stands for the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. And you would imagine that it has those types of articles in there.
One would think.
One would think. I don't think they would have sports articles.
Probably not. You never know.
You never know. But that's something new as well. So there are lots of new things in the library. And, of course, in this time of the year when students are getting ideas for papers and research projects, we always want to remind them of the research coach, which is something that we offer in the library. And we have two reference librarians who can help them, and those would be
Melissa Moore
and
Jenny Lowry.
Very good, Stephen. Yes. You passed today's quiz.
Woo.
And so if there's a student or a professor who would like to encourage their students to take advantage of research coaching, just contact Melissa or Jenny.
Yeah, I think there's a very cool way of registering for a specific time online.
Yes.
You know, under the research coach link on our website, you can click on, choose a time that they are available and that works for you. It's very convenient. It's very nice.
Yeah, and that way you don't have to call if you don't want to. You just go to that and set it up, and it's a very neat thing. Also, Jenny and Melissa can do library instruction for classes. So if you are a professor and you would like to contact, and if you would like instruction, just contact one of them. So lots of things going on in the library and across campus. And, of course, here shortly, there will be dirt moving, and we will be seeing the new beginnings of a library.
Yes, so, it's neophyte stages.
It's neophyte stages, yes. And today on the podcast, we are very happy to have back to our program Tim Ellsworth.
Yeah.
And Tim is here to
our
talk.
Our first recurring guest, I
That's
believe.
Right. Yeah. And he is here to share his experiences, or some of them, that he had at the 2012 London Olympics. And we will be back after this to talk with Tim. Tim Ellsworth joins us today. Tim is the Assistant Vice President for University Communications and Director of Media Relations here at Union. He is the author of two books, Pujols, More Than the Game, co-authored with Scott Lamb, and Gone in the Whirlwind, Stories of Grace from the Tornado at Union University. Tim is also the sports editor for Baptist Press and was recently on assignment for them at the London Olympics. We are happy to welcome Tim back to our podcast. Good to see you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Well, you were, I believe, our first guest.
Really?
I
didn't know that.
So.
Yeah, pilot episode.
I'm honored.
I think so, yes. So, first of all, what is Baptist Press?
Baptist Press is the official news agency of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Okay. And how did you get started writing for them?
It's been a while. I've written for Baptist Press in some form or fashion ever since I was in college here at Union.
Okay.
Back in the 90s. And I was able to get to know some of the folks there while I was in college, and they were kind enough to let me write for them, and from time to time, and it just kind of grew from there. I went from college into to work at the Illinois Baptist newspaper, and so my relationship with them kind of continued there, working with them in that context. And back several years ago, I started writing a weekly sports column for them, and did that for about 5 years, and then they let me do things like go to spring training and cover baseball stories.
Nice.
The Olympics came up from that. And so it's just been a long relationship that I've had with them for, I mean, coming up 15, 16, 17 years now.
So the Olympics, that was your latest assignment, I'm assuming.
Yes, that's correct.
And this is a pretty big assignment. And how was that as an experience? Because I guess it's one thing to watch the Olympics on television, and then it's a totally – and just you can't imagine what it would be like to be there. But you have been there, so tell us how that experience was.
Well, the Olympics are one of the best things that I get to do for Baptist Press, probably the best thing that I get to do for Baptist Press. And this was the third time that I've been able to go to the Olympics. I went to Beijing in 2008, and I went to Vancouver in 2010. And so then London here in 2012. And you're right, it is a completely different experience. I grew up watching the Olympics on TV like most people did, and I always enjoyed it, always liked getting a chance to watch sports that I don't really care about any other time of the year, like most people. But it is a neat thing because you're pulling for your country, and people are cheering for the same athletes from your nation. And so I enjoyed that, but getting to be there in person really is something else because you've got the whole city that is just consumed by the Olympics.
Right.
And it's such a big deal to be there in that city while it's going on. And there's just such a festive atmosphere in the city for those people who aren't going to the Olympics. They still feel like they're part of it, even
right,
if they're
sure.
not watching an event live. And so I'm really blessed to be able to do that.
Now, when you were there, you, according to an article in the Jackson Sun, you stayed in an unusual place. I mean, you weren't in a hotel necessarily. Where did you stay?
I stayed at a place that's actually student housing. Okay. And so because I work at a university, I figured, you know, I'd go and and stay someplace like that. But no, it was a student housing for the School of African and Oriental Studies there. And it was a nice place. The reason I chose it is it was cheap, and I was trying to be as economical as possible to save Babbitt's Press some money. And it was really convenient to public transportation. And so I had a bed, and I had my own bathroom, and I had a desk, and that was pretty much all that I needed. So
I'm sure you had a computer or a tablet or some type of device to connect you to the world.
Absolutely.
And so the opening ceremonies. Now, I did watch pretty much all of the opening ceremonies, and I believe in the article in the Jackson Sun, you thought that the Beijing opening ceremonies were a little better than the London, in which I believe I watched some of that from 08 as well. Now, it was kind of an odd opening ceremonies with the smokestacks and all this kind of stuff and the kids jumping on the beds and then the queen flying,
parachuting in
with James Bond and all that kind of stuff. It was interesting. So what impressed you most about the opening ceremonies of this Olympics?
I don't know that I've thought about what impressed me the most about this opening ceremony. I'd have to go back and think through the whole thing. It's neat to see some of the history of the British culture and the English culture that they chose to highlight. I thought that they made some strange decisions about some of the things that they did choose to emphasize and some of the things that they left out. I probably would have made some different decisions about if you're going to celebrate their culture, what you choose to celebrate. But it was a fine show. I don't think it was up to the level of Beijing, but I don't know that anything's ever going to be up to the level of Beijing. I mean, they were so over the top. And they were trying so hard to introduce themselves to the world and make a statement that I think that any other country is going to be hard-pressed to match that. But they did a fine job, and they had so many different – there's so many different parts to it. And anybody who is in charge of creating this opening ceremony and directing the opening ceremony, it just blows my mind how creative these people are.
Because, that's what I was left with as well.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even begin to – how do you come up with an idea for some of the stuff that you
exactly. said?
Where did they get that?
Yes.
I could never do that.
It has to be huge.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And so and just the way that it's choreographed and organized with the lights and fireworks and all that kind of stuff, it really is a good show. And to be able to see it in person, it doesn't do justice to seeing it on TV once you've been there in person to see it.
Right. And so since you were there with Babbitt's Press – you had a specific assignment, and tell us a little bit about what your assignment was.
My main assignment was to write about the Christian athletes that were competing in the Olympics. I did some other work with different individuals and teams that were there doing various ministry and outreach in London. But primarily, I was concerned with writing about the Christian athletes that were competing.
And do you know about how many there were?
I don't know. I don't know how many there were total. I concentrated on about there were probably about 12 to 15, I think, that I concentrated on.
And certain names going in that you were.
A lot of my interviews I did ahead of time. I start work on the Olympics several weeks before the games actually begin, and I start interviewing people and trying to arrange interviews with people. A lot of times it's not real easy to get interviews with them. And so I start doing that several weeks out. And then when I'm there, I actually go to the events. I report on the events that they're competing in. I talk to them afterwards, do follow-up stories about them and how they did and those kinds of things. And so, yeah, I have pretty much a list of people that I have on my radar that I try to target and keep up with and report on while I'm there.
Are they pretty receptive to reporters in general, or you specifically, since you were coming probably at a different angle than most?
Yeah, I think for the most part that the athletes are receptive to reporters in general. at the Olympics. I think in one sense you've got athletes that are in sports that don't get a whole lot of attention any other time. Mm-hmm. And so they're very glad to talk about their sport and to be in the spotlight for that two-week period because they don't get a lot of opportunities to do that any other time. And so in that sense, they're happy to talk to reporters. And they always have – they have what's called a mixed zone where after the competition, the athletes have to go through this – kind of like a maze-like thing, and you have reporters stationed around, standing there waiting to talk to them, and they stop and talk to reporters. And most of them are very accommodating. And I do think that there are some of them who are especially happy to talk to me because as far as I know, Baptist Press was the only Christian news organization that was credentialed for the Olympics. There may have been some others that were there that I'm not aware of. But I haven't seen any reports from any that were credentialed. I never did encounter anybody that was there. And so I think they do like to be asked about their faith. They like to talk about their relationship with the Lord because this is something that they don't get to talk to other reporters about. Other reporters don't emphasize that and don't go into that in depth. And so – and for most of them, that's the most important thing in their life. And so – that's what they're happy to talk about, and then they're grateful that I'm there to ask them about that.
Was there one athlete who you covered who impressed you more than anybody else?
There are a couple that stand out, and I don't know that I can pick any one that's more impressive than the other, but a couple that do stand out. One of them was David Bedaya, who was the men's diver that ended up winning gold in the individual competition and bronze in the synchronized competition. And David's got an incredible testimony. He was at the Olympics in 2008. He didn't medal. He came back from the Olympics and went to Purdue as a student and talked just about how empty his life was. I mean, the Olympics up to that point for him were the height and the highlight of what he had done athletically. And he remembers coming back from the Olympics and thinking, all right, is that it? Is that all that there is? And he talked about how empty his life was. He was pursuing athletic success, and that was really his God until he just got to a breaking point, and he couldn't go on. He woke up one day from a nap. He couldn't get out of bed. He was just didn't know what his purpose was in life. And one of his diving teammates directed him to his coach at Purdue, Adam Soldati, who's a believer. And David went over to his house, and Adam and his wife sat down with him and shared the gospel with him. And it was a period over several weeks that they just continued to witness to him. And David ended up becoming a believer. And so then at this Olympics, he's got a completely different mindset than what he did 4 years ago in Beijing. In Beijing, he's all about himself and living for the moment and trying to get everything that he can. And he talked about how he went into this Olympics just trying to live for God's glory and trying to love his teammates and love his competitors and show the love of Christ to them in the way that he acted. And he was so much more fulfilled. And then he ends up winning the gold medal. So it was a really good story. He was very impressive. And then there's an archer on the women's team, Jennifer Nichols, that I interviewed back in 2008. And she was impressive then, and she continues to be impressive. She's somebody who is her language just is permeated with scripture, and the way that she talks, I wish I knew as much Bible as what she does, and the way that her language expresses it. And she has devoted to the Lord, and she is getting married here this fall, and she's actually this is what was her third Olympics in London, and she's backing off of her archery competition in the future because she says that she wants to be a wife and a mom and that's what the Lord has called her to do. And she thinks that if she continues to participate in archery competition the way that she has, that she would have to make too many sacrifices for her family. And she says she's not willing to do that. And so I thought that was impressive that here's somebody who's willing to forego what most people would think is the ultimate experience and the height of her profession. She's one of the best in the world, and she's willing to give that up because she thinks the Lord is calling her stay home and build a house and a home with her husband, mm-hmm. and care for her children that will most likely come. And she's willing to make those sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a great example as well.
Yeah. As far as the events themselves, what stands out in your mind as the most memorable?
A couple of things. I was there for the 100-meter dash final, mm-hmm. where Usain Bolt won his second gold medal. Mm-hmm. And so
– did you talk to him at all?
I didn't, okay. No. I don't have any reason to think that he's a believer. Bob Costas had a great quote about Bolt. He said it would be hard for anybody to think more highly of Bolt than he does of himself. He's an incredible athlete, and so it was neat to get to see that competition. And then I was there the night for the track and field competition that Great Britain had their best day, mm-hmm. in the Olympics in, mm-hmm. I don't know how many years.
Right.
And
they wound up fourth in the medal count.
I think so.
Right?
I think they were fourth in the medal count and third in gold medals, okay. I think, is yeah. if I remember correctly.
And that was good to see.
Yeah.
It really was.
And but anyway, that night was the night that Jessica Ennis won the heptathlon, the women's heptathlon. It was the night that Mo Farah won the 10,000 meter. Mm-hmm. It was the night that, I forget the long jumper's name, who won the gold medal in the long jump. But that stadium was so loud, with cheering for Jessica Ennis and Mo Farah especially. So it was really incredible to be there and just to be a part of that energy that's coming from these 80,000 people that, mm-hmm. are cheering on their countrymen,
yeah.
and who are succeeding beyond what anybody could have expected, yeah. for them in the Olympics. And so it was such a great night for the British people. And it was a lot of fun to get to be there. And see that and see them so excited about it.
Right.
Oh, here's an important question for you, Tim. What did you think of the food while you were there? Were you able to find something to eat?
McDonald's?
Yeah.
I did eat quite a bit of McDonald's and things like that, just out of convenience.
Sure.
Because I'd be on the way here and there, and I knew that I could stop in and get something quick. I was glad to get back home because I'm not convinced that the British people know what salt is, and that's probably to their benefit.
Yeah, really. I was going to say it might be,
but it certainly doesn't help with the taste. And I had some good food, but the British food is notoriously substandard by American standards, and I would concur with
fish
that.
Fish and chips? Did you have any?
I had fish and chips one time. I did, and. But I think I lost like 8 pounds while I was there. I don't know if that was probably a mixture of not eating as much and just walking around all over the place and getting more exercise than I usually do.
And what about security? Did you feel safe for most of the time you were there?
I did. Yeah, and that was one of the big stories leading up to the Olympics. Mm-hmm. There was talk about how they didn't have the security personnel that they needed and all that. And I thought that they did an outstanding job with security. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much the same of what I was used to from previous Olympics and how you go about the screenings that you have to go through to get into the events and the venues and those kinds of things. But, it was there was never a time where I felt like there was a lack of security, mm-hmm. and I didn't see anything like that. And so I certainly felt safe the whole time I was there.
That's good. And, of course, this was the 40th anniversary of the terrorism act on the Olympics at Munich with the Israeli athletes. And I remember that so well. I was 10 years old, but that was just kept you riveted to the television, what was going to happen next, and, of course, the tragedy that was a result of that. So compared to the other two Olympics that you have been to, how does this rank?
Different. I don't know that I can compare them because, for one thing, Beijing was my first experience.
Yeah.
And that was so exotic because I'd never been to Beijing before and I'd never been to an Olympics before.
Right.
And so that was my first experience with both of them. And so you kind of combine those. And
do you have a preference for summer or winter Olympics?
I enjoy both of them. Yeah. Vancouver was really nice because – it's a nice change of pace because in Beijing it was so blasted hot everywhere you go. It was nice to be in Vancouver where you didn't have to worry about sweating to death everywhere you went.
Right.
And that was one of the nice things about London too, is in the 60s and 70s the whole time I was there.
Right.
And so it was very comfortable to walk around, and so I enjoyed that. But I probably enjoy the Summer Olympics. I think there's probably more events that I enjoy watching in the Summer Olympics. But, I mean, the Winter Olympics are great, too. I enjoyed watching the ice hockey. I'm not a hockey fan. I watch hockey once every 4 years, and like so many other people.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think that's fine. And a lot of people criticize that and say, well, you know, it's what's the point? People only care about it once every 4 years. Well, so what?
Yeah. Something to look forward to.
That's right. Yeah. And something to get excited about, something that's different. And so, so I think that – one of the things about London that I enjoyed more than Beijing was it was easier to get around because London's got such a better public transportation system than what Beijing does and more developed. And so in Beijing, I was more dependent upon the official media transportation to get me where I needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
In London, I very seldom rode the media transportation. I just rode the public transportation because it went everywhere that I wanted to go.
Right.
And
I suppose the language barrier was
that was another thing. That was another thing that I really liked about London and Vancouver as well. When I was there, is you're able to talk more and have more conversations with people. The language barrier is not a factor, and so that makes it different. Because there were times in Beijing where it was hard to communicate with people, and you didn't have that in London, and so I enjoyed that.
So in a couple of years, we've got the Winter Olympics coming to Russia, and then in 4 years, the summer, come to Rio.
Rio, yes.
Are those on your travel itinerary?
I don't know yet. I think that I've had some conversations with my editor at Babbitt Press, and I think that they're inclined to send me if I want to go, and so we'll see how it goes with that. I have applied for credentials for Sochi for 2014.
Okay.
And but that's a long way away. Mm-hmm. It's like a 24-hour trip just to get there because it's not an easy place to get to.
Right.
And it's hard because I have to leave my wife with my kids the whole time that I'm gone, and that's a long time away from home. And I enjoy – and it's good for them. I mean, my wife, we've talked about this. I mean, she it's difficult for her, but yet she says that it allows them to experience the Olympics in a little bit different way than most people get to experience it because they know that I'm there. And so they're watching these things and getting into them and talking about where I am. And those
do they realize that you're not competing in the Olympics?
Yes. So she's – you know, the kids get excited about that. But at the same time, whenever I come back, I enjoy watching the Olympics with my family.
Right.
And like so many other people do, they come home from work and eat supper and you turn on the TV and you watch the Olympics for a couple of hours before the kids go to bed. And it's something that you don't get to do that often. And so I did get to do that this year with the last week of the Olympics, the last half, because I was there for the first half of the Olympics. But so we'll see. There's a lot of things to consider, and I've still got about a year and a half before I have to go. I've got to make the decision a little bit sooner than that because booking travel and lodging and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it all sounds exciting. Well, one thing before we get you out of here, we want to talk a little bit about Albert Pujols and what your reaction was to him going west.
You really want to know?
Yes, I really want to know. Since you wrote the book and we talked about that last year, so what do you know?
Well, I mean, I'm a Cardinal fan first and foremost. Before I'm an Albert Pujols fan,
I think there's another one sitting in this.
That's right.
Studio.
Yeah, two Cardinals fans.
And so I've been a Cardinal fan before Pujols got there, and I'm a Cardinal fan long after he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that regard, I was disappointed with his decision to go to Anaheim. I thought that he had everything that he could have possibly wanted in St. Louis. I wish that he would have stayed there. But at the same time, I'm glad the Cardinals didn't pay him the money that Los Angeles did.
Sure. Right.
Because I think that if they would have tried to have matched that, I think it really would have hamstrung them for a long time. Because I don't think he's going to be productive over the course of the contract, over the length of the contract.
40-year-old, $25 million a year.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be 41, I think, whenever his contract expires. And so I just don't see him being worth $260 million.
Do you think there are some personal feelings involved in the decision? Did he feel slighted by the Cardinals in some regard?
I think he did, and I think that I think he was wrong in how he viewed that because he talked all along in this process about how the contract negotiation, it's business. You know, this is business. Mm-hmm. He talked about how he wasn't going to give a discount or that much of a discount because it's business.
Right.
And so then whenever the Cardinals approach it from a business standpoint,
he
gets his feelings hurt because he wasn't made to feel like family, like Artie Moreno. He talked about how Moreno was, made him feel like family. Mm. Well, you can't have it both ways.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, if it's business, then let's look at it from a business perspective. If family is more important than that, then don't talk about how it's business.
Sure.
And so in that sense, I was disappointed with him. But on the other hand, I don't blame him for taking the money. I mean, and we can talk all we want to about, he was making enough money. It should have been enough. How much money do people need? I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that. And I know that money's not everything. But he got considerably more money to go to Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bigger Hispanic community out there, mm-hmm. and that may have been something that factored into his decision. And until we get put in that position, I think we got to be careful about criticizing people for taking more money.
Right.
And it wasn't something; it was just like $100,000 extra. I mean, it was several million dollars more. And yeah, making $20 million a year is a lot of money, but several million dollars more is also a lot of money to leave on the table.
It's easy to say he should leave
that much
on the money, but on the table. But you know,
that's
hard to say what you would do in
that
situation yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, are there any more books in your future?
I hope so, but I don't know what they are right now. So, if you have any ideas, then
maybe one about the Olympics.
I've thought about that, and I've done a little bit of work on thinking through what that might look like.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought about doing a humorous one. I had a friend who back a few weeks ago came up to me at the Southern Baptist Convention. In all seriousness, he asked, "Were you in the Olympics?" And I've kind of joked with him over the weeks since then and thought about writing a book about my life as a supposed Olympian or something
like that. What
sport
would you be
really wish I had been quicker on the draw whenever he asked me that, because I was just kind of taken aback. But I would have said something about synchronized swimming or synchronized diving.
Trampolining,
or,
maybe.
Yeah. but no, I've never been in the Olympics. Just been to the Olympics. And so I hope to write another book at some point, and hopefully, several books.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder at this stage in life than I am right now, when my kids are older and take more time.
Right.
It's harder to get away and harder to justify being away in order to work on something like that, because it is so time intensive.
Yeah.
But we'll see what doors the Lord opens and what opportunities may come up.
Sounds good. Tim, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
It's good to hear your Olympic stories. Very interesting. And all the best in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Appreciate it, guys.
We'll be right back. We're back, and we would like to thank once again Tim Ellsworth for his time and very interesting
stories.
Yeah,
that was a great interview, yeah.
Yeah, I would think it would be very cool to be at the Olympics.
Very, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe one day, Stephen, you and I can...
I plan on competing in the
2016. Maybe we could do like two-man bobsled. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe we'll need to start practicing. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
A little behind.
I might be too old for that. I don't know.
I don't think there's an age limit.
Okay, well, we'll see. We can work on that. So anyway, we want to thank you all for listening, and we also want to take this time to welcome our newest employee in the library, Savannah German. And Savannah graduated from Union back in May of this year, and she is the Serials and Electronic Resources Associate, and she will be helping out Jeannie Bird, and they have always a big task at hand, keeping all those things, all those serials and microfiche and electronic journals and all that stuff
A lot to keep track of.
It is, and they do a fine job. So welcome to Savannah, and until we meet again, we thank you for listening, and please come by the library and see us and check something out.
And we'll talk to you next time.